Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mark. Hey, Rebecca. I know we're having a lot of these travel logs right now, and of course, we're following Sam's journey around the world. But, you know, Rebecca, it seems that everybody is out traveling, and they're out at different countries, whether it's Asia or whether it's Europe or Africa.
Yeah, it's Middle East. I think a lot of people are out in even South Asia. I think it's just a lot going on with all, everyone's kind of gotten kind of a little groove with the new rules that came out last year. They're getting familiar with the forms and how to get back into the market after all the changes.
Yeah, the world has certainly opened up and people are joining it.
It's like COVID never happened, Mark.
Or everyone has a stay-at-home fatigue, and now they're getting out.
Right. But it isn't the same. You know, that's what all of these changes are that Sam has brought to us. And welcome, Sam. Are you still overseas? Are you ever coming back to the U.S.?
Mona, I am most assuredly coming back home soon, but you are quite right. I've been on the road a long, long, long time. And it's about 4 months plus, but I'm happy to tell you that in less than 2 weeks, I expect to be back home in New York City, finally. Never in my life did I think I'd make a 5-month trip, Mona.
It has definitely been a marathon for you. And we've discussed internally really how much the world has changed post-RIA, post-COVID, but you've seen it in person.
Well, absolutely. I mean, India, which is what I'd like to talk about today, is something that has probably changed more due to the Reform and Integrity Act than any other major or even minor EB-5 market. So it's absolutely true. The Reform and Integrity Act has created a new world in EB-5. There is no question about that. The old rules, you know, if you just keep abiding by them, you'll just suffer. And if you learn to move with the changes, then you can really take advantage of the opportunities that Congress has opened up.
Sam, India is huge, as we all know, and North India and South India are like two different countries. Have you been all over India? Do you see the differences?
Well, absolutely. There are three basic markets in India. I'll tell you where I've been. The South Indian market, I've been to both Hyderabad and Bangalore, which are pretty much put together 80% of the South Indian market. In North India, I went only to Delhi, but that by itself is 60% of the Indian, North Indian market. But in West India, I did a much more thorough job. I was in Bombay, I was in Ahmedabad, I was in Pune, and I was in Surat. If you add it all up, that's close to 80, 90%, possibly more of the Indian market. So yes, I met with, easily 24 agents, probably more, closer to 30 agents across all these cities, the 7 cities. Right. And yeah, I think I got some idea of what's going on.
You know, I was in Bombay last November, and the idea that before going out, I was told, look, you know, we're wasting your time going to Bombay because it's saturated. There's no interest there. But I didn't find that at all. I found a lot of interest. Are you finding the same, that there are cities that are saturated or said they're saturated, but they're not really?
Well, definitely there is more opportunity than meets the eye once you go out of the beaten path, no question. On the other hand, there is differences. There have been some serious setbacks for some of the established players who had relationships with agents. You know, the projects went sour and south. So some of the agents are looking to change alliances. And in addition, you know, every market is dynamic and continues to change. So I'm not saying India is wide open, but it's much wider open than meets the eye.
So Sam, I have a quick question for you. You know, we're always talking about wait times. And India, as we know right now, under the old category, under unreserved categories, India is in a backlog back to April 2017. Now, when we first went out to India, there was no backlog. I mean, we had a tremendous amount of investors coming in because EB2 and EB3 categories were heavily backlogged. What are you seeing now? Are you seeing a difference? Because now we have RIA, we have the set-asides. Are you seeing more and more clients or investors coming in wanting to fill those set-aside visas?
Well, no question about that. I mean, Congress may have been motivated by wanting to get the Chinese investors back into the market, and in which task Congress has succeeded handsomely. But I would say that by creating the set-asides, Congress has equally motivated both the Indians and the Vietnamese for the same exact reasons, that they were also backlog countries. So what has happened is two things. Now, not only have the actual times gone down in terms of just being the processing times, really, and nobody having any fear about the quota wait, but even more importantly, it buys the prospect of very limited waiting time, if any, for a long period of time to come in Indian Vietnam, possibly as long as 2 or 3 or possibly even more years. So it has given the market a completely new lease on life there. And if anyone says that, look, when someone's putting in a huge chunk of money and is then required by Congress to wait for years and years and years, and that is not a deterrent, if somebody says that, then they certainly don't understand what motivates investors. So, you know, I think I would repeat, Congress has hit the ball out of the park. I said that about China, but I think Congress has done it equally well in both India and Vietnam. So yes, Rebecca, I think to answer your question in short, absolutely is the answer.
Are you seeing a difference between the set aside for rural versus high unemployment areas? Just because for the listeners out there, the rural area has priority processing. Are you seeing more investors going for that, or are they actually looking at the projects and determining which they want versus wanting to go in just because they're just going to have faster processing times?
Well, there's no doubt about the fact that the market is moving towards rural. But the interesting part is that nobody is buying this point about priority processing, partly because it's not defined, but mostly because USCIS has a long history of defying congressional mandates on times. They've done that so often, and with such impunity and with such disregard of Congress again and again, that the market has more or less discounted the priority processing completely. Now, having said that, the market is moving from urban to rural at a very fast pace in India and indeed across the world. And the reason is apparently across the world the same. The reason is not that the agents are pushing rural. In fact, quite the opposite. But it's the investors across the world who have read Congress's intentions. And you know what? They're very easy to read. Congress says 2,000 for rural, 1,000 for HOAs. So guess what? It's very simple for anyone, any investor in the world who hears that, hears it loud and clear that Congress wants one to go for rural, and therefore they're clamoring for rural, and they are actually leading the agents down the path of getting more rural projects exposed in the market and closed in the market. So yes, that trend certainly applies to India. The market is moving into rural for these reasons.
So Sam, here is a point though I would like to bring out that Rebecca and I have noticed over the years. With Indians are a little bit more savvy than we have found investors from other parts of the world who tend to rely on their agents. The Indians themselves will come in, they will look at figures, they will look at locations, they will do their own due diligence. And what we have seen is that an Indian may jump to rural because they think that it might be a faster processing. But if they think they're not going to get a return on their capital, they don't mind spending a couple more years waiting as long as they can get the concurrent filing, because the return on the capital is very important. Right, Rebecca?
Yes, we've seen that with a lot of our investors.
Well, 1 second. You mean return on capital, or do you mean return off capital, or do you mean both?
I mean both. Return on capital and return of capital. Return on capital meaning the interest rate paid. It seems like the Indian community are much more in tune to this than anywhere else, where the rest of the world will accept 0.5% or 1%. The Indian community tend to ask for more. And return of capital, which may be much slower in a rural location where the economy is not the same as an urban location.
Well, on the issue of return on capital, I would agree that's always been the case. And therefore, the average return, it's important to note it's an average return in India on capital, not off capital, but on capital has always been higher. In terms of return off capital, look, the record of this industry clearly shows that even when in theory a particular location in a major city might have the ability to attract many buyers should it go through a liquidation proceeding, the fact is that in such troubled circumstances, the actual monies returned into investors' hands has been triflingly small. So that being the case, I would say the due diligence piece applies not to the speed of return of capital, but to whether the capital gets returned at all. And that, I think, is a lot more important to the Indian audience. It is important to the other investors, but they tend to be less able to judge the creditworthiness, or not only creditworthiness, more importantly, the possibility of liquidation for their particular place in the capital stack in case dire circumstances should befall the project. So all I'm trying to say is that it's not a matter of, oh, rural is slower and urban is faster. I think each project is different and each must be judged individually. And I think that's the way the Indians have always done it. They've not taken anything for granted. They've been really particular and meticulous, speaking as a group, than any.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sam. And Mona, we've seen this where we've noticed with our Indian investors, obviously, they want to go into these projects that do have the faster priority processing or faster adjudication times, but they do sit and look at the projects. It is case by case, and they do look at the financials, because ultimately, at the end of the day, yes, the green card is important, but they are looking for that return of capital and the interest that they could earn from that investment.
Sam, have you noticed something different this time around in India, perhaps something unique to India?
Yes, yes, absolutely. The Reform and Integrity Act has affected India in a unique fashion, unlike any other market in the world. And the change is structural, not merely a trend like moving from urban to rural, for example. It's a structural change. There is two of them. One of them is very well known. And the other one, I suspect people haven't remarked upon it yet. Everyone in the market will be seeing it very clearly within 6 months, I would say. But right now, I don't know anyone else who has remarked upon it. So let me cover both the structural changes. One, which is widely known as concurrent filing. What that has done is incentivized the Indian filings, or rather filings for Indian-born investors from the United States who are here on legal status, usually an H-1B, and has incentivized them to such a tremendous degree that as a proportion of the total India-born investors, a huge chunk, perhaps as much as 2-1, some people say 3-1, has moved into the United States. In that sense, India is unique in being the only EB-5 market in the world, which is actually two markets. It's Indians in India and Indians in America. Now, this is always been true, but concurrent filing has given it a tremendous jolt. It has moved it from, let's say, 1:2 to 2:1, which is a major change indeed. So that, I think, validly counts as a structural change in the market. In other words, if you want to attack the Indian market in a meaningful and thorough way, you have to attack it from the American end, no question. But there are interesting things happening at the Indian end. And that's what I want to talk about. The second structural change, which is kind of under the radar at the moment, and which will certainly burst into everyone's notice at some point soon. But I mean, of course, this podcast will hopefully help, but even if it wasn't, people would eventually, you know, after all, market players want to know what's going on, and they eventually put two and two together. Here's what's happening. Let's take a step back. Across the history of this industry, last 10 years, it's a very very short history so far, this industry has been agent dominated, which is what everyone says. But there has been a small amount of vertical integration, which means regional centers and other issuers who have established foreign offices, foreign subsidiaries, foreign representatives, and a variety of different presences and different forums in various EB-5 markets across the world. And those folks have occasionally operated not just in negotiating and liaising with agents, but in independently sourcing investors directly without the help of agents. And that has been going on in all markets to a very, very small extent. But in India, it has been different. As best as I was able to make out, and this is what I learned as I went through all these seven cities, two big truths. One is that the vertically integrated players in India have been in, let's say, the 2018-19 timeframe, when the market was last in full swing there. Those vertically integrated players have been maybe as much as half the market, perhaps a bit more than half. I would say even 60-40. 60-40 in favor of the vertically integrated players, which means that the agents in India have been playing a kind of a second fiddle role, right? Now, the Reform and Integrity Act has changed this dramatically. You see, most of these vertically integrated players, almost all of them, have been urban players who are now unable to qualify for the high unemployment areas. So all of a sudden, the Indian market has noticed a sudden vacuum. The players who have been folks who were good at corralling investors and persuading investors and educating investors, all of a sudden, 60% of them are kind of inoperative. I'm not saying all of them are gone. Let's say most of them, 80-90% of them are gone. So roughly half the market is up for grabs.
So Sam, I'm going to just interrupt you for a second because you sent out a really good blog post just recently about the value proposition of old RCs, whereas the old RCs were very, very good at bringing people in on those glitzy projects. Those glitzy projects now, because of the changes in RIA, no longer have TEA status. And whereas we might see everything reshuffle in a few years when we have more visas, at this point, for an Indian going into a non-TEA means going into a backlogged situation. So Sam, are you suggesting that the current players don't know who is in the field right now?
Which is what I saw when I met with all the Indian agents. They were not aware. They were blissfully unaware. Some of their biggest competitors, the vertically integrated players, had exited the market. And it was not just that player A was missing or player B was missing, but that all the players from A to Z were missing, pretty much, in most markets. So my point is that all of a sudden, I believe that the Indian agents over the next 3 months, 6 months, possibly beyond 9 months or a year even, will suddenly see a giant increase in market share on a relative basis and will probably see some absolute number increases too. For the same reason, which is that all of a sudden, the vertically integrated players are no longer around to absorb the demand for EB-5 in India. So all of it is going to come into the agents. And then the agents, as I said, now are being pushed into the rural direction by their investors who have figured out that 2-to-1, which Congress says 2,000 to 1,000 means 2-to-1 in favor of rural. They want to go there because they too believe that India will get backlogged and they want to queue up before they get into a bad situation. So the two structural changes are, one, concurrent filing has moved even more of the Indian market to American shores than before. And two, that the vertically integrated players have largely exited the market and will probably stay exited for quite some time, perhaps some of them permanently.
Let me ask you though, so we're seeing this now, and it's because, of course, India has no, under RIA, under the new set aside categories, there's no backlog. What happens? What do you think will happen? Because I see backlog happening in the future, probably closer than not, because these categories are going to get taken up very quickly. What structural change? Do you see that change going back, reverting back to what it was in the past? How do you see that moving forward? Is this something new now?
Yeah, the concurrent filing will get even more pronounced as the backlogs for India develop in coming years. Obviously, I don't think I'm saying anything which anyone in the market doesn't know or would have any objection to. But the other change, the vertically integrated players, some of them intend to remain out of the market. For example, I talked to one Texas-based developer, very enormous, of Indian origin, had developed a tremendous amount of buildings, had got a solid EB-5 operation going in India. And he told me point blank, I mean, he's made a lot of money over the years and EB-5 is an afterthought for him. And he told me point blank to my face that, look, it just doesn't work for me anymore because I will build only where I will build and I will build where I have land. And if it happens not to be an HOA, and so be it. I mean, been there, done that, 85, no more for me. So some of these players, there's many like him, have no intention of returning back to the EB-5 market. So I do think that even once India becomes backlogged, this structural change will persist. So the Indian agents have every reason to believe that they will be more powerful in both absolute and relative terms in their own home market, in their backyard, in the coming 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 years. I mean, basically until the life of Rhea.
Well, we've also seen, Sam, that the Indian agent isn't as in tune to EB-5 the way the Asian agent is. And that is because so many Indians themselves speak English and come out on their own. But just generally, they're not as in tune.
Well, I mean, they don't have the volume. The Indian agents tend to be, you know, a fraction of the size of the large Chinese agents and even a fraction of the size of the medium-sized Chinese agents. And I mean, they're not basically immigration people. The Indian agents are mostly folks in the finance, from the finance world, you know, accountants and sometimes lawyers and people like that. I mean, lawyers qualified in India, of course, right? But my point is that in terms of the Far East agents, they are in the immigration business, even putting aside EB-5 completely. I mean, they do EB-1As, they do NIWs, they do EB-1Cs, and even putting them aside. They do, I mean, permanent immigration. They do temporary visas like student visas all the time. They do European immigration. They do Caribbean immigration. I mean, they're genuinely immigration companies. So I'm not surprised that their ability to understand immigration in America is far superior to those that of the Indian agents. So, but, you know, despite that, the Indian market is something which, as I said, from the Indian agent's point of view, because of the trends I noticed, is realistically going to grow.
Well, Sam, the visa numbers just came out this month, which showed that, again, EB-2s and EB-3s are regressing backwards. We're still at 2009, I believe, for EB-3. But at the same time, we've had the taxation issues which have come in for Indian folk sending money outbound. Have either of these things affected the market for EB-5?
Well, absolutely, in terms of the TCS, which is the tax collected source. It's interesting. I talked to a number of agents and there was a clear pattern. A lot of people were upset saying, well, this is an additional cost. I think it's 15% additional cost for doing an EB-5. And that's a deterrent to the market because that's an expense. But that was about half the market. The other half of the market, they said, well, wait a second. All I have to do is to simply file my return. And when I file my return, I get that tax back. It's an inducement to filing your taxes. It is not an additional tax.
If I may, I think what the issue was, what I was seeing, I think it's an additional, so it went from 5% up to 20%. And the problem that we were seeing is that a lot of the investors, what they have to do is they have to provide that from the beginning. So if you're sending out the 800,000, now you have to show 800 plus the 20%, and then you have to put it back in to get that refund later. So the problem is showing it or providing it up front. Are you seeing issues with that?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's similar to an increase in ticket price, is it not? So therefore, it would dampen demand. So to that extent, you are correct, Rebecca. My point was that some people look at it as a sunk cost. If the market is unable, for reasons unlike America, to file returns. Believe it or not, many people in India don't file returns and can't file returns for problems that they have, which are unique to them in that particular country. There are several countries like that. Of course, we in America find that kind of strange, but that's the way they work. Those people think of this extra 15% as a cost, you see, and that dampens demand. That's half the market. The other half of the market simply says, listen, I come up with it up front, I file my return, I get my money back. What's the big deal? It's only a cash flow issue. So it's uneven effect. Overall, it's a dampener, but it's not as big a dampener as it might appear.
Sam, you know, ILW sent out a very interesting blog post just very recently about the value proposition of old RCs. And I wasn't quite sure whether you were referring to RCs relating to Asian clients as opposed to South Asian clients.
No. The thoughts that we shared with the community recently was intended for what has happened to the existing longtime players of the establishment, if you will, in EB-5 as a consequence of the Reform and Integrity Act. I don't think there was a distinction between East Asia and South Asia that we intended, because the magnitude 9 earthquake, which is what I think is the best metaphor for the Reform and Integrity Act, has completely scrambled the entire EB-5 ecosystem equally in every part of the world. And if you like, we can, you know, take a quick look at how that has happened.
Please do. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, some part of the tremendous value proposition that the established players brought into the market remains. I mean, their ability to create excellent marketing material, their ability to create material that, you know, legal documents that USCIS can feel comfortable with and approve, that remains unchanged. So that value proposition is solid. But an important part of their value proposition was relationships with urban developers, some of whom have exited the market permanently, related just being the most prominent of those. So my point is that to the extent that folks had such close relationships with such large urban developers, that value doesn't exist anymore. In addition, COVID has done a number, oh my God, a terrible number, on the AB5 agents across the world. I mean, they have suffered terribly, and half of them are gone, blown into the four winds. So to the extent that the established players had their agent network as an important value proposition that they provided to developers, that has diminished to the extent that the network has shrunk. Furthermore, the skill set of the old RCs was how to sell projects which met with three criteria: large, branded, and glitzy. And now, you know, with the market moving into rural, the securities have neither the glitz, nor the size, nor the brandedness that they were accustomed to selling. So they have to learn how to do it. And in that sense, they don't carry any specific advantage over a newer player. I mean, Congress clearly intends new players to come into EB-5 by forcing a move into rural area for EB-5. And my guess is that, look, not everyone is going to go away. Their advantages are significant and well-earned and well-deserved. So half of the top 25 RC players of 2019 will remain in the top 25 in 2023, 2024, and beyond. But the other half, you see, I think they might either shrink or might disappear entirely. But that, I think, is a major change. And one part of it which is unappreciated, or maybe not enough appreciated by people, is how much the Reform and Integrity Act has armed the USCIS with new and to some extent dangerous powers. And the long histories that the established players present in terms of their huge 526, you know, footprint with the USCIS, the huge 829 footprint with the USCIS, provides a happy hunting ground for a USCIS which is inclined to move into the enforcement direction as opposed to a newer player. So sometimes, you know, people think that, okay, you know, the older players have all the advantages, and that is partially true, but it's only partially true. I think the Reform and Integrity Act is a bigger scrambling of the ecosystem than most people realize, and that's my two cents, Mona.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Sam. And Rebecca, I think you agree with a lot of what Sam has said.
Yeah, I agree a lot with what you've said, but I also think those regional centers, the ones, like you said, who will stay in the top 25 is because they have in the past done, you know, what RIA has brought out and the compliance and all of that. So I get what you were saying. And I think it's an interesting point that they will have more to show, and that USCIS might revert back to not remembering that these RCs have been out there for such a long time, and they're going to look at them at a stricter point of view now moving forward, even on the older cases. But I think for most, they've already done it, and it's there.
Yeah, we're seeing that. We're seeing the way we're seeing the results of RIA already coming in. But, you know, Mark, this has been wonderful. We've had such insights through Sam's travelogue in the
right.
last three episodes.
Exactly. I love getting the feel from the country, you know, what's happening at the deck plate on the ground. So, Sam, thank you for these updates.
You're most welcome. It's been a pleasure to share all these experiences with the EB-5 community, and I hope that it has provided people with a new perspective and hopefully with some ideas on what to do with their own particular niche in the EB-5 ecosystem.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshahlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.